The following is a paid program.
The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Ugh, what a yucky day. But welcome in. See if we can lift your spirits a little bit to talk about a big Kentucky basketball win and look ahead to the football game on Saturday against Middle Tennessee on this cold, rainy, dreary Thursday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. I think it's supposed to be better tomorrow and into the 50s and sunny skies on Saturday, which is great for the football game and for Senior Day. And hopefully there will be a very good turnout for the seniors to salute them. I understand the disappointment off the last couple of games, but it's a senior class that has accomplished a tremendous amount, and they are looking to go out in a big way, and hopefully they can do that on Saturday. We'll talk about all of that coming up on the show today with Kyle Tucker from The Athletic, Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated, and former Kentucky basketball player John Hood. That's our guest lineup for this Thursday, served up by Sleep Outfitters. Wildcat news of the day. Let's get to that. It's presented by Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Kentucky rolls over North Dakota 96-58. P.J. Washington had a big game, 25 points to pace Kentucky. He hit four threes in the game. Calipari talked afterward about how P.J. had, or they had worked with P.J. to shorten his shooting stroke. In the past, he brought the ball too far down, and it's what Tubby Smith once referred to with Tayshaun Prince as a slow load or a slow load up. It takes a while to get the ball from down around your knees up to shooting position, as opposed to now where they have him starting from around his chest. And obviously worked well for him last night. Keldon Johnson had a double-double, his first one, 12 points and 10 boards in the game. Tyler Hero, 18 points, 5 steals, 3 assists. Nice to see him get his shooting stroke rolling. And E.J. Montgomery gave him 8 points off the bench, and Cal said after the game that E.J. must play more. And I was looking back at the highlights, and you see him flying around getting offensive rebounds. You see him challenging shots. That he's quick off the floor and has a good second jump, something Mike Pratt often talks about. Charles Barkley, one of his amazing qualities. E.J. seems to get back up as high on the second jump, or close to it anyway, as his first. So look for more of E.J. Montgomery in the weeks to come. A couple of other things. They forced 20 turnovers. They did some trapping in the game. P.J. Washington said afterward it was not something they worked on a lot, but they did it. It worked, and so they kept doing it, and it produced 12 steals. P.J., by the way, started, played only 1 minute, and came out. He said the reason was he wasn't supposed to start. It was supposed to be Nick. So I guess maybe somebody turned in the wrong lineup. So they ended up starting the same five that started the game before, and then they subbed in Nick within about a minute. Cal also, a couple of phrases looks like you'll be hearing. Separators. Cal looking for somebody to separate from the pack. He says E.J. Montgomery looks like he could be one of those. And another one was buddy basketball. He said it's a term that he's used before. It's two guys playing off each other. He wouldn't say who he was talking about doing that last night, but it's something that he looks to toy around with to see if it can be effective for them to put two guys in together to play for an extended stretch and to try to run things through them, have them play off each other. A couple of football notes. Josh Allen, one of five finalists for the Bronco Nagurski Award to the nation's top defensive player. Josh also named a player to watch for the Walter Camp Player of the Year Award. And Benny Snell's a semifinalist for the Doak Walker Award. Women's basketball. The Kentucky women play Virginia tonight, and it's at Rupp Arena. So they're looking for a big crowd down at Rupp tonight for a big game. UK volleyball's won 18 straight. They beat Arkansas 3-0 last night. And in college basketball, how about this score? Michigan over Villanova, 73-46. Maybe it's going to be one of those years with crazy scores. The Duke-Kentucky game, now Michigan beats the defending national champ on their home floor, on Villanova's home floor, by almost 30. Beat them 73-46. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. We are headed to a break. It's the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Kyle Tucker joins us when we come back.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
Quarter past the top of the hour as we go to the Kentucky Branded Hotline, bring on Kyle Tucker from The Athletic, and we'll start with basketball and a big win last night over an outmatched North Dakota team. But what, if anything, did you come away with thinking that you learned about this team last night?
Well, I mean, apparently P.J. Washington can shoot it. That was pretty impressive. He was 5 of 21 from 3 all last season. Something he wanted to show in coming back and, flirting with the NBA and coming back. He wanted to show that he could do some things away from the basket, show some skills and not just be a bruiser. And now he's 5 of 7, I think, for the season after going 4 out of 5 from 3 last night. So that was really something. I don't think that's what he's going to always be, but it's clear he can make that shot. That was big, and just in general for him to have a big game. He had really struggled out of the gate. The same thing for Tyler Hero. Just to think, very important for him to see some shots go down. He hit his first one and was kind of off and running. I think big for him to kind of shake off rare struggles. He has not, in as I understand it, in his career to this point, not really struggled for really even 2 games in a row. And so that was a little bit new to him.
Cal talked after the game about needing to play E.J. Montgomery more. Previous game, he talked about how important Nick Richards would be to this team because of shot blocking. And yet, you've got P.J. Washington had a big game, and Reed Travis is Reed Travis. So it's going to be interesting to see how the four bigs, could you see them going with 3 big guys for extended stretches at some point?
Yeah, I think you could definitely do that with E.J. because he can step out away from the basket if need be. He can also, it looks like he's a pretty capable shot blocker. He's not probably strong enough right now for some matchups, which is where you bring in Nick Richards. But I think EJ could play with Reed and PJ at times. Him and Nick played together a little bit last night. I've been of the mind the last couple weeks that probably, and basically what Cal said last night, that I think you almost need to just roll with EJ a little bit. Let him play through mistakes because he is going to make some. Let him play through some of the bumps and bruises because of all the guys, probably all the guys in the post, he has the biggest upside. I think, when you project out what could he be 5 years from now and maybe even 1 year from now, he may have the most upside. He's got so much skill offensively. He can do things that I don't think anybody else can do offensively for them in that group of big men. So, if you say, how can Kentucky make a huge leap from the ugly, shocking beatdown they took in the first game to the end of the season? Where could they really get better? One guy, I think it's probably E.J. Montgomery. I think he's a guy who could have a massive growth over the course of the season. Maybe he becomes their, to some extent, their Carl Towns. I know they thought a ton of him in recruiting, enough that Cal said to him, you're not a want, you're a need. And made some Anthony Davis type comparisons in recruiting him. And so if you think that much of what he could be, I think you may just, roll the dice and take some lumps with him and hope that he, by March, is that guy.
Yeah, because with Carl, whom you referenced, it wasn't really until, middle of January before he started to really find his groove and get his identity?
Yeah, he wasn't. And Cal said this last night, I forget how hard this is, and I just remember how it ended up. I think people often do that with Kentucky guys, and even Anthony Davis. Now, he was really good right out of the gate, but he was way better by the end. Carl Towns was not a dominant player at all, I don't think, for at least a couple months. And as you say, January, February, and then there comes the Notre Dame game, and he's a monster. It certainly wasn't instant with him.
No, it wasn't. And, he was wanting to you know, play the way he wanted to play, and then finally he kind of accepted the way they wanted him to play, which really started to click in the last month and change of the season. And EJ's a guy that's got quite a skill set, as you mentioned, because he can step out and hit a 15-18-footer. You could see where he could develop a back-to-the-basket game. I don't know if it's his most comfortable thing right now, but you could see it. You know, the skill set's there to do that. Block shots. Seems to, you know, he might be the quickest jumper that they have.
Yeah, that's another thing. I think he's where he's also really valuable is, like, he seems to always find the ball when he's anywhere around it, and the ball comes off the rim. He's really good at the you know, tip in, put back. He's really good at kind of making the aerial play if it's a lob or something like that. I think that's really a really valuable weapon as well. And two on EJ, I think he's going to be a test case for how much Calipari has learned about coaching guys like him, because I don't think he ever really had a handle on what to do with Scal. And I'm not saying EJ's Scal, but a little bit like that. I mean, you've got a 6'10", 6'11 guy who's really skilled, who's maybe not physically ready or even mentally ready to be a true, like, you know, bang around in the post type guy, but could be valuable to you if you figure out how to use him. Carl Towns, even a little bit. I mean, he was kind of, Cal forced him, and it eventually took to play down low. But we see now that he's in the NBA, he's a shooter, and that wasn't totally utilized here. And Anthony Davis, a shooter who didn't really utilize that a lot at Kentucky. I think as Cal tries to coach and be on the, you know, on the cutting edge and play guys the way they're going to play in the NBA, it'll be interesting to see if he learned some lessons from successes and failures with some of those big guys, those skilled big guys, how he lets E.J. Montgomery play, and maybe gets out of his own comfort zone with how he lets a big guy play. Because I think if you accept, as a coach a little bit, accept weaknesses and strengths, and recognize strengths and play to them, E.J. Montgomery is a major weapon for Kentucky.
Talking with Kyle Tucker, he writes for The Athletic, which is a subscription site that you can find at theathletic.com, and also does a daily podcast with Curtis Birch. Where can folks come and find that?
And pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Google, all that stuff. So if you have a favorite podcast channel, as it were, we're probably on there. And also, I'll have something up a little bit later today. I went and spent some time with during the game with P.J. Washington's dad and Tyler Hero's dad. Oh. I was curious how those two guys dealt with watching their son struggle so much in the first couple games, and also the advice that they gave them. And it was interesting. P.J.'s dad was pretty calm and unfazed for the early struggle. But Tyler Hero's dad was tightly wound. He admitted being a nervous wreck after a couple of games seeing him struggle. I said, I'm sure you've seen, you know, he's a shooter. I'm sure you've seen him go through slumps like this. And he said, never seen him have two bad games like that in a row. So he didn't know how to handle it. And he was very relieved to see Tyler Hero play well early and throughout that game last night. So I'll have something up on that here in a couple hours.
We're talking with Kyle Tucker here. And I think for a lot of this year, we're going to always look back and think back in terms of a measuring stick of what we saw in that Duke game. And no matter how good it gets, will you really trust it until you see him go up against, some high level of competition again? Probably, it's not going to happen certainly in the short term here. But you look at that game and you look at Kentucky, you think, there's nobody on the Kentucky roster that's going to get to the offensive level of two or three of those Duke guys, I don't think. But that's where this team maybe has to accept its identity is things. How good can they get defensively? Becoming a great offensive rebounding team. I think those are the things that Calipari is going to be looking for, right?
Yeah, because, I think in some way you almost have to, like, put the Duke thing out of your mind if you're Kentucky. And even Kentucky fans, because if you're watching, if you just keep your eye on Duke all season and the crazy numbers these guys are putting up, then you measure yourself against that, then it's almost a hopeless kind of endeavor. But we all know that things can change that, you know, they may never even see Duke again. You know, the idea that they might have to go through Duke, that Duke team, to have a chance to go to the Final Four or to get to the national championship may not happen, for one. And if it did happen, it could be totally different. You know, a number of things could happen for Duke, and I think a lot of growth can happen for Kentucky. And as you said, I don't know that they could match Duke offensively. I don't think anybody can, the firepower they have. But if you make them uncomfortable defensively, then you don't have to. And Kentucky did almost nothing to make Duke uncomfortable defensively in the first matchup. And I would imagine they play it a little different this time. Guys would have a different approach. You don't want to say, let's get in one-on-one and we'll just outscore them. That's a mistake. But if you can harass them and bother them, and there's a reason Calipari thought he could have an elite defensive team. He's got some pieces. He's got individual guys who that was kind of their reputation, and they've all got the athleticism to do it, the length to do it, I think the quickness to do it. I think it's a matter of some young guys buying into that idea and just doing it. That's where I would be watching Kentucky. Can they actually get it together and play a really, really good defense and crush people on the glass? I think they can. But as you say, we're really not going to know anything about this team until they play North Carolina and then Louisville shortly after. I think, you know, it'll be closer to Christmas and almost New Year's before we really know how much progress this team has made. And two, like, it's possible Kentucky is the second best team in the country and Duke is just the first, the best by a wide margin. But I don't think we know that yet either.
Yeah, kind of like Alabama in football, maybe. We'll see. Speaking of football, can Kentucky find a way to get back to that form we saw earlier? Certainly offensively, but even, you know, defensively, to get back to what we saw in these last two games?
I would think so. You know, in part because of competition. You know, I think Middle Tennessee is a good team. Certainly at its level, I think it's not an SEC team. Louisville has been a train wreck, and you would hope if you're Kentucky that you can take advantage of that. They haven't been able to stop anybody. I think it would be very telling if they can't score and move the ball on Louisville. I do think Mark Stoops would have been much happier for Bobby Petrino to play out the string and be playing a lame duck, given up Louisville team and coach. May get a little energy under the interim head coach who I actually covered at Virginia Tech, Lorenzo Ward. He was Bud Foster's right-hand man on that defense for a long time. So you may get a jolt of energy and maybe some new wrinkles that you weren't expecting when you get Louisville in 2 weeks. But
yeah.
It feels like they ought to be able to get back on track. And for all the sort of air that's gone out of the balloon, if you finish 9-3 and end up in a great bowl game with basically a historic win total, best in 40 years, I think people have to be generally pretty satisfied by that.
Absolutely. Kyle Tucker, thank you much.
Thank you.
Read him at The Athletic, and we'll be right back on the Leach Report.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
It's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. I should have mentioned this earlier, too, that Mike Pratt obviously joins us normally on Thursdays, but we let him sleep in a little bit today since he had the drive back to Louisville after the game last night. Mike will join us tomorrow. Right now on the Kentucky Branded Hotline, we bring in Justin Rowland from CatsIllustrated.com. And Justin, we'll start with just any thoughts / takeaways for you from the last couple of Kentucky basketball games.
I thought with about 10 minutes to go in the second half against Southern Illinois, they started to really start to put it together a little bit. One of the things that jumped out about that game was like half of their points were either putbacks off offensive rebounds or transition points. So they're still kind of struggling to generate half-court offense, but at least they took pride in those hustle points, and they started to find their footing. And then I thought for the first time all season it looked like they were having fun last night. They played an opponent that didn't try to slow them down too much, and that definitely worked to North Dakota's disadvantage. And, you know, a number of bounce-back, confidence-building performances, especially from P.J. Washington and Tyler Herro. So I thought it was a step in the right direction.
Yeah, with P.J., you figured it was going to happen, but by the same token, you never want subpar performances to linger. A couple of games, if you can shake it after a couple of games, is always best.
Yeah, and, you know, when he returned for sophomore year, Calipari said that what NBA people have wanted to see from him is skill consistency. So one game, you don't want to put too much stock into it, but I was just, last year, there were segments of the season before he really turned the corner at the end when he was just, he had these lows that lasted for too long, and he came out firing with confidence. He wanted to be assertive on the offensive end. I thought it, after only two games, it boded well for him that he was able to come out with that kind of mindset.
Yeah, it's going to be the challenge for him. You think back to last season, you know, forget the free throws, just how he looked otherwise in that tournament game against Kansas State. But you think about that first half down at Tennessee where he just was eating Grant Williams up until he got injured. And yet those kinds of things weren't sustained over a stretch of games and a stretch of weeks. And that's the challenge for him this season.
That's right. And I would say that this team has enough players that they don't need any one or two or even three players in order to win against most teams this year. But I think P.J. Washington is an exception to that. I think when March comes around, they need him to be firing on all cylinders because, you know, if he can knock down 4 out of 5 three-point shots, you know, more than a few times a year, I mean, if he's got that kind of range, that's going to open up a lot of things for everybody else. And you can tell everybody's just kind of feeding off of his energy. His bounce off the floor was quicker. You could just tell noticeably he had a better mindset.
This is just, as you were saying that, I'm just thinking about this. This kind of goes along with Calipari's word of looking for a separator. Kentucky, that's the best way to put this, Kentucky needs to need a couple of guys, if you know what
I
mean.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. Yeah, and P.J. Washington, I think, is definitely one of them. Tyler Herro, I thought, turned the corner. One guy that I think has quietly found his footing is Emmanuel Quickley. I think he was really a non-factor against the Duke game. He's really the X-factor among those guys in the point guard role because Ashton Hagans, we know his on-ball defense. The offense is going to be limited this year, I think. Quaddie Green, I think against length and athleticism, he's going to have some limitations, but he's been very important this year. Emmanuel Quickley got to the free throw line a lot. He's been important to Kentucky in transition, getting out and running. He's bringing the energy. I think Quickley is going to be one of those guys as well.
Talk with Justin Rowland from CatsIllustrated.com at Rowland Rivals. We'll shift to football. Although the focus, I think, among fans is on the offensive side as they head into these final two games. They get outside of the SEC, so maybe that helps. But the two things, there are two stats that just jump off the page, you know, pre-October and post-October 1, and it's the decline in explosive plays and the increase in sacks. And what do you think the issue has been? Is there anything you can identify?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're facing more stacked boxes. I think even though Terry Wilson's numbers have not markedly declined from earlier in the season, actually pretty consistent, I think opponents know pretty much what the limitations of Kentucky's passing game are and that they don't have to respect it down the field a whole lot. And I think gradually that's kind of put more of a strain on the offensive line. Digging into like the Pro Football Focus numbers and stuff, apparently the offensive line played better against Tennessee than they had a couple of games prior to that. The issue was more, I think, maybe Terry Wilson kind of holding on to the ball, knowing when to elude the pocket, get out of the pocket. And I think part of the problem is the offensive line has definitely regressed, but part of it is he's definitely locking in on one receiver, and he's not really going to that second, third read enough, and that's an experience thing, I think.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that teams got a book on him after a few games, and that the next move, so to speak, in the chess game is for, you know, him to be able to evolve and grow a little bit.
That's great, yeah, and I think the receivers can help him out a little bit. You know, that's something that if you're not at the game and you don't have like the all 22 footage, you know, it's kind of tough to see what they're doing as far as getting open, getting separation. I haven't seen, just because a quarterback's not making great plays doesn't mean the receiver doesn't have a responsibility to make a quarterback look good sometimes. And I haven't seen receivers making a lot of great plays to kind of bail him out. And I think that might be weighing on him in terms of, should I release it? Do I let it go when I don't see anything open yet? But it's supposed to be open. So maybe some mental games playing in with that as well.
Yeah, it's kind of a trust thing both ways, maybe.
Yeah. I think there were a couple of games when he lacked trust in the protection, but against Tennessee, the protection was a little bit better, and he still was a little bit skittish and quick to kind of, you know, turn his back to the line of scrimmage and run backwards and around out of the pocket. So the lingering mental effects of that, and certainly true with the receivers as well. You know, he's got to. I think it would do him a world of good to see if he has like a deep post or play action to Isaiah Epps or somebody, and they go up and make a play over a defensive back. I think that would help him out a lot.
No, I think you make a great point there. If you could just see that happen once or twice, they've thrown that ball all year, and they hit, I think, one post pattern against deep one against Missouri when they were playing a little softer, and they hit Gunnar Hoke hit one early on more of a slant than a deep post, really, for the touchdown to Bouvier. But you know that deep post pattern that Steven Johnson made a living off of a couple of years ago, they've been trying all year, and they don't hit it.
Yeah, a lot of times you hear about coaches talk about a quarterback, he doesn't need to be Brett Favre. You don't have to fit it through every window. And Wilson's issue is kind of the reverse right now. I mean, it's easy to forget he's done some really good things this year. He's got like the highest completion percentage for a Kentucky quarterback in a pretty long time. Pretty reliable, dependable on those short, intermediate throws. You know, obviously dangerous with his legs. I think it really is a mental thing with him. But the deep ball accuracy is something he can work on. But he's just got to trust that he's going to put it out there before it's wide open and somebody will make a play.
Something you're doing on your Twitter timeline this week, I noticed, is looking at the detailed look, if you will, at the seniors that are going to be playing. Mm-hmm. It's a senior class that has made some significant achievements in their time here. It's not as much as they would have liked it to have been this season, but it still can be a very special year, and just they'll look back on their whole careers and feel very good about it. But as you put together those little pieces on individual guys, what's been sometimes when you get into something like that, you find something's a little surprising, whether it's a stat or a particular play, anything that jumped out to you?
Yeah, just an example. One of them, and thanks for bringing it up, was Chris Westry. I think a lot of people, I frankly assumed that Chris Westry kind of peaked as a freshman, you know, especially we think about that game against South Carolina, their second consecutive win against South Carolina, when he really locked down Pharaoh Cooper, and he had a sack that game, he had an interception, a pass breakup in the end zone, and from that point, everybody's like, okay, we got a first-round pick on our hands, because there's a 6'4" cornerback, and when he doesn't put it together and have, like, these all-SEC seasons, people assume that he was just a bust, but I mean, Chris Westry's given up 6 of 12 completions this year for like 60 yards, 0 touchdowns. Pro Football Focus, again, says that he improved from his freshman to his sophomore and from his sophomore to his junior year. So while he might not have lived up to our lofty expectations for him, when you really dig into the numbers, it's interesting to see how sometimes, you know, our assumptions have been unchallenged for too long, I guess.
You can go to @RolandRivals and scroll back and find some of those pieces that Justin has put together for this week for Senior Day. And hopefully they'll have a big, boisterous crowd to send them out, and they can have a P.J. Washington kind of game and have a feel-good bounce-back game.
They deserve it. One game under 500 in SEC play over the last 5 years, the last 4 years, and that's, you know, just tremendous progress, especially when you consider this year the East has started to trend back in the right direction, so they've done a lot.
Thanks, Justin.
Thanks a lot.
GatsIllustrated.com. Justin Rowland with us on Thursdays here on the Leach Report. His segment's presented by Shuffle Bean Coffee. We are coming up on 16 away from the top of the hour. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. They have locations in Hamburg and in Palomar, Kentucky, owned and operated. Everything is made from scratch. And come out and join us on Monday at Palomar location for our Monday morning quarterback show. We'll be right back with John Hood.
Find out more about the voice of the Cats and get great coverage of the Big Blue at TomLeachKY.com.
Thursday edition of our show, and we go back to the Kentucky Branded Hotline. Bring on John Hood. Played his basketball career in the John Calipari era that started back in 2009. And John now is one of our analysts looking at how things are going for the current Cats. What did you see that you liked last night, Hoodie?
Well, that's something I don't think I've ever heard before is me being called an analyst. But
sure.
I liked how they came out. I liked the intensity that they started with. It looked like more of an emphasis to get Reed Travis the ball early, and then once he got going, it really opened things up for everyone else on the floor.
Seems like it'll take a little while maybe for this team to kind of find its identity, maybe, right?
Yes, and I think that's evident. Because you see Coach Cal kind of simplifying the playbook, you hear him calling more plays. He's got a much more of a control on this team than he has in years past. This early in the season, he understands that this team isn't where everyone thought they were, and now he has to kind of take control until someone steps up as that point guard leader and empowers the rest of the team and takes the reins.
Your second year, you guys went out to Maui and got thumped by a UConn team that you came back and were a point away from beating in the Final Four by the time April rolled around. I'd forgotten until I went back and looked at the box score that they were up by a greater margin in that game than Duke was in this game last week up in Indianapolis. So how does a team, I mean, the final margin didn't end up being as bad, but it was still a decisive victory for UConn. As you think back to that time, how did you guys get back on track and find your way to make it to a Final Four? What did Cal do to help you do that?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind when you bring up Maui and UConn is the 8-hour plane ride that we had home, where everyone in the team had to go up, or everyone that played had to go up and watch a certain clip with Coach Cal. And my clip was getting just crossed over by Kemba Walker. And I'm very glad that social media wasn't around, because it was really, really bad. I mean, it was there, but it wasn't prevalent, I guess. So I would have went viral for what happened there. But how he helped us, he did exactly what he's doing now. He simplified the playbook. He got more of a control over point guard Brandon Knight. Just real simple. He just called more plays. We ran more set than actions.
And you know, as you went through it, did that change significantly from year to year? The percentage of things that he had to call for those teams that you played on versus what you guys were able to kind of do on your own.
Yes. And throughout the year, guys will quote unquote get it. And I think the one in recent years that you've seen get it is De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
Once De'Aaron Fox, I mean, he was wild a little bit early, but once he kind of got under control and understood what coach wanted from a point guard perspective, that team was rolling.
That game that,
but
to your point, Coach Cal,
He makes it very known what he wants, and it's just the player's job to go out and do that. And it's either Coach Cal's will against whoever the player is, and he'll tell you, and I'm sure he's told you before in your interviews with him, he's going to win that battle no matter what.
Absolutely. Back in 2011, when you said he went to calling more things for that team, did that stay that way the whole year, or did the team evolve a little bit as the year went on, or did that team need that for the whole season?
We evolved as the year went on. It's just, what does that team need at that specific point? And Coach is one of the greatest in the country and the greatest of all time, I would argue, at understanding what a team needs and giving that team what they need. And just like last night, he was calling out, and watching on TV, you can hear him, but he was calling out elbow. I don't think I've ever heard him call out elbow this early in the season, but it works. And that's what this team needed, so that's what he did.
Is that a particular play that usually doesn't come to later in the year? Is that what you're saying?
He likes to hide things. So we'll work on stuff in practice a month and a half before we play somebody, or are really going to need it, or have a stretch where certain things are going to work in our schedule. And as he always says, it only matters what happens in March. So he's playing for March, and he doesn't want to give away every single play in the playbook this early. An elbow usually comes just after Christmas.
Oh, interesting. But this team needs it now.
This team needs it now.
I was said, I don't know how much you follow racing. You're a Kentucky guy, but I don't know how much you grew up following that. But I've said he's like a guy preparing a horse for a trainer preparing a horse for the Derby, in that he's got to get the peak on the right day, and he only gets one shot with every horse because there's so much turnover. It's kind of, he gets one shot with each team, and they got a peak in March. And so I think there's a lot of similarities in terms of how he just kind of pushes different buttons until he finds one to bring that team, or in the trainer's case, that horse, to its peak effort.
I think that would be a very, very good analogy of Coach Cal. That's pretty spot on. I've never heard it put that way, but that's 100% correct.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter. You do some trial and error. You find the thing. You try some things. And part of it is you got to be a guy like him that's been in it long enough and is accomplished enough that you don't panic when, something doesn't work. You just kind of, okay, this isn't working. Let's try this.
Exactly right. And Coach is, like I said, very, very good at that. If he needs to bring plays out early, he'll bring plays out early. But he's got such a repertoire of them and is such a basketball mind. He knows when teams need it. He's playing to the strengths of this team. And this early in the season, he's done a very good job. I understand that the Duke game was a bit of an anomaly, but I mean, stuff like that happens. We got thumped by UConn, as you said, and came back. Say it again, sorry.
Happened to Villanova last night.
Oh yeah, I did see that. And didn't Notre Dame get beat last night too?
By Radford, yeah. So,
and if I saw it right, Marquette got thumped by Indiana.
Yep, you're right. It's November basketball. John Hood, thank you much.
Thank you, sir.
We'll get you back for some more analysis later on. Right now, we're getting to a break. Come back and wrap up this edition of the Leach Report in just a moment. Tonight, a slice of Wildcat history. This day, 2006. Perry Stevenson made his debut as a Wildcat by blocking 7 shots. That was a record for a freshman. It came in a 57-46 win over Miami of Ohio. Happy birthdays. Carl Anthony Towns did battle with Anthony Davis last night. They both had double-doubles. Charles Matthews had that big win, part of that big win for Michigan over Villanova. He celebrates a birthday today. And another former Kentucky basketball player, Clarence Tillman, born on this day. That'll do it for us. Back tomorrow with Jeremy Jarman, Mike Pratt, TJ Beisner here on the Leach Report.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the Leach Report Radio Network.